Thank you. So the work that I will be discussing, discrete electronic states in ferromagnetic nanograins, has been done together with my graduate student Sylvia Clef, and with experimental group in Cornell of Dan Ralph, namely Manda Deshmukh, Sophie Guerin, Edgar Bonnet Roxo, and actually Pasupathi. And I should in particular thank Mandar for giving me permission to use some of his beautiful experimental slides during this talk. I'm a theorist, but I'll be showing you lots of interesting data. And I should also thank Carlo Canali and Alan McDonald for some very helpful correspondence on this work. Turns out they came up with basically the same model as we had been studying. And Alan will be giving a talk after mine telling you about their work. So the experimental setup is similar to what Dan discussed this morning. You study tunneling through nanograins, in this case cobalt, and the question is how do the ferromagnetic interactions affect the tunneling spectrum? And first point to note is they do manage to resolve discrete individual eigenstates. Lots of interesting spin-dependent effects were seen, particularly hysteresis due to change in the direction of the magnetization of the grain as you sweep a magnetic field. And we will try to come up with a simple phenomenological model to explain the gross features of the spectra. You will see that the details are very complicated. I think it's not at this point possible to make a really detailed microscopic model, but we try to find the minimal model that captures what has been measured. And the main assumptions, the main conclusions of our theoretical analysis will be that variations in the anisotropy energy of the grain are important, and that non-equilibrium effects also play a big role in these grains. So just to remind you, the type of system that they are using, this is the same slide as Dan showed this morning. They have small cobalt particles of sizes 1 to 5 nanometers in diameter attached between two leads and surrounded by an insulating tunnel junction. And by applying a bias voltage, you can pass a current through the grain, which turns out to increase in discrete steps. And the spacing between the steps reflects the energy spacing between the discrete eigenenergies on the grain. And so by analyzing the conductance curves as a function of magnetic field and gate voltage, you can get a lot of detail about how these eigenenergies behave in the magnetic field. And just typical numbers for grains of size, the number of atoms ranges from 20 to just above 1,000. And correspondingly, if you just take the bulk value, that the spin per atom is 0.83 in cobalt, that means spins from 17 to about 1,000. Okay, so those are the sizes of the particles we are working with. Now, again, just to remind you of what simple data for non-magnetic particles look like. Let me just flash the slide for a second. Dan also showed this morning. This is for aluminum. If you apply a magnetic field, discrete energy levels split due to Zeeman splitting. You just see straight lines, and it can be understood very easily in a very simple model. Okay, and in cobalt, it will be very much more complicated. So the first set of data on cobalt grains that date from 1999 are summarized on this slide here. This is the first set of data from the Cornell group. So over here are shown discrete energy levels, the function of magnetic field, out to large fields, up to 8 tesla. The first thing to note is there are no Zeeman splittings. All these lines move in one direction, either up or down, depending on what sample they are considering. Okay, so no Zeeman splitting is happening. Secondly, at small fields, there's very complicated structure, which is shown here on a larger field scale. There's hysteresis, discrete jumps, etc., which I'll be analyzing in more detail on the following slides. But this is just to show this is the type of data that was out there in 1999, and it was basically for us incentive to start thinking theoretically about what might be going on and how one could try to model this, the behavior of such small grains, magnetic grains. Okay. Now, in the meantime, experimentalists have been refining their measurements, and some more detailed data is available, which is shown here. So one of these plots, again, shows you a set of discrete resonances as a function of magnetic field. If you move up one of these lines and plot the conductance, you see discrete resonances. Okay, and this plot shows how they move around in magnetic field. Now, several points should be made. The first one is you have hysteresis. If you sweep the magnetic field from positive to negative, and from negative to positive, the spectrum looks reversed. In particular, there's a field over here, which I denote by H switching, at which all the energy levels show a discrete jump, which is at negative fields, and over here you have a similar field at switching field at positive fields. Now there's a small blip here around zero magnetic field, but that is an artifact of the fact that the leads are made from aluminum, which are superconducting at very low magnetic fields, at zero fields, but a small finite magnetic field suppresses superconductivity, and that shifts the position at which the resonances occur. But this is a well understood phenomenon, so you can just assume that the levels basically move smoothly through zero, but then, as I said, at some finite negative field, they jump, all jump here, and all, and if you reverse the direction, sweep direction, they all jump at this field. And this is an indication, well, what you're seeing here is that the direction of the magnetization vector flips suddenly at a given, at a certain specific magnetic field. So you're seeing an interplay between the applied Zeeman field, which wants to align the spin in the direction of the field, and anisotropy energies, which want to the spin to point in a certain easy direction. And at this point, one of those terms wins over, and the direction of the spin flips suddenly, which means that the environment, the energy landscape of the energy levels also changes suddenly, and therefore you see that as a jump in the discrete energy levels. Another point to be made is that each of these energy levels moves differently as a function of field. They don't all move parallel, which means that an independent electron description will not work. The energy levels are coupled to the direction of this total spin, and each does its own thing. So one needs a description which has such correlation effects in it. Okay. Okay. Now let me show you the same type of plot over a larger magnetic field range. So here the field is swept from minus one to plus one Tesla. You see the same type of structure just resolved a little bit better now. And again, you see the levels. Each level has its life of its own. You see level crossing sometimes. And you see at the switching field, some levels jump up and some levels jump down. So really, it's very clear that the anisotropy energy which each of these levels is feeding, which determines how its energy will change as the direction of the spin is rotating, is different for each of these levels. However, if you then increase the magnetic field out to minus 8 Tesla, so this plot is an inset of this one, then all this strange movement quiets out, and all the levels move more or less in parallel, all in the same direction. Again, you see no Zeeman splittings. Okay? And the final point about the data which I want to make is there's a typical level spacing associated with these resonances, which is on the order of 0.2 milli electron volts. And now you can try to estimate what would be the level spacing you would expect for a cobalt grain if you just go from the density of states at the Fermi surface and use the estimated size of the grain. And what you find then, for just using bulk values for the density of states, for grains with a spin smaller than 1,000, the level spacing of majority electrons is larger than 4.6 milli electron volts, and for minority electrons, larger than 1.2 milli electron volts. So there's about an order of magnitude difference between what you would expect on the, using the most naive estimates and the observed spacing. So in one line, there are many more resonances here than what you would naively would expect. Okay? So that is the data that we are faced with. And we now will try to construct a minimal model that hopefully has the necessary ingredients to qualitatively understand what's going on. The energies, the energies, the eigenenergies shift relative to each other.
Question, this is
zero bias, or up this direction the bias is increased. You increase the bias in order to measure the success of resonances. Okay. Yes, absolutely. So I just basically. Well, so in the simplest picture, you'll say there are a set of available states you can go into if you add another electron, and the density of state should tell you what the spacing is. But I'll argue that is not what's going on in here. Okay, so. I'd now like to discuss a simple model that we came up with basically in the diploma thesis of Sylvia Cleff. The model, as I said, was independently also proposed by Canali and McDonald. And basically what we'll take is just two energy bands, two bands of discrete states, one for spin up and one for spin down electrons, which are shifted relative to each other due to an exchange interaction, but which have discrete levels. Okay. So the terms of the Hamiltonian are as follows. There's a kinetic energy which just counts, the kinetic energy of all the occupied states. Then there's an exchange term, the rather large exchange coupling constant U, which forces to encourages the system to have a large non-zero total spin. Okay, so this term favors a big spin. And it's constructed from the total spin of all the electrons. So S basically is just the sum over the spins of levels in states J, summed over all J. Then there's a Zeeman coupling to applied magnetic field, which I've here taken to be in the Z direction. And there's an anisotropy energy, which favors certain directions. So there will be an easy axis and a hard axis. And in general, it's very difficult to specify the precise form of this term because there are various contributions to the anisotropy energy. There's crystal anisotropy, shape anisotropy, surface anisotropy, and since the grain is not well characterized, we will not even try to come up with a detailed form of this term. For the purpose of this talk, I will just use the most simple form for an anisotropy, for easy axis anisotropy, like this, S dot N, where N is the easy axis, and Kn is a coupling constant characterizing the strength of this anisotropy term. Now, over here, I've allowed for a more general form, where I have a tensor, K, which can an average value and some fluctuations, which depend on which levels are occupied. But for the purposes of today's talk, I'll just analyze this particular form. Okay, so, yeah?
Find their levels?
Yes.
Do you assume there are no inter-level components?
No, they are. I mean, where are you asking now, here or here? Look, this thing is quadratic in spin. I have Si and Sj summed separately. So an electron in this level can interact with that level all over the place. This is sort of the most general form I could think of. Oh, you mean the exchange, you mean? Yeah, okay. So in principle, I should put this constant in here at indices U sub ij also. That would be slightly more general form.
The exchange looks like it's just total spin squared.
Yes, it is.
Which is supersymmetric.
Yes.
But you have, another big thing that there is no supersymmetry in principle, right? Because spin orbit destroys. So then it's not clear why exchange event.
Well, it's basically, okay, I have two terms quadratic in spin, and I've separated into one thing which is completely isotropic and the rest. Okay, and this is much bigger, certainly, the separation energy scales. But I could have also probably just lumped them in one, but I think it's, this is the isotropic term and this is the rest. Okay, so I think this model has all the ingredients you need. It has discrete energy levels, which are clearly observed. It has an exchange, definitely these grains are magnetic. It has coupling to the magnetic field, which is also clearly seen, and it has anisotropy energy. And I don't think you can do with less than these ingredients. Okay? And now the question is how to analyze the behavior expected from this model. Okay, so let me first just discuss the ground state to ground state transition if you add a single spin. Plot here, so using this uniaxial form of the anisotropy. So if I assume that the anisotropy, effective anisotropy constant Kn is the same for the n and the n plus 1 or n minus 1 electron state, so if this delta K term is equal to zero, I get for the ground state to ground state transition these blue lines. And what I want to point out about them, well, there's a jump corresponding to the switching field with the direction of the magnetization turns. And from that you can read off, well, the jump occurs more or less when the magnetic field is on the order of Kn. So from the position of this jump, you can get an estimate for what Kn is. And from the measured data, it turns out Kn is on the order of 0.01 millielectron volt. You don't know, because you don't know what the easy axis is. So this is just, this number can vary depending on the direction of the magnetic field relative to the easy axis, but within an order of magnitude, this will be the scale of the anisotropy energy, okay? However, if you use this parameter delta K equal to zero, as in this blue line, there are no non-monotonic behavior of the discrete energy levels. And let me just remind you, over here, you see very wild up and down behavior of the energy levels. So the next thing we looked at is what would happen if you have if you allow for differences in the anisotropy constants between having n or n plus 1 electrons. So we use a value delta K, which is not equal to zero. And then you see that depending on how strong that is, you can have quite non-trivial, non-monotonic behaviors. And the direction of the jump as you go through the switching field can be either upward or downward. So the message is, if you allow for small variations of delta K, you can get a much more non-trivial behavior of these energy levels as you sweep. And the amount of variations which you have to allow is on the order of 1 to 3%. And then you can get the energy scale and the variations that are seen in experiment. Another important point is, if you have such variations, notice that the size of the jumps depends quite strongly, the size of the jump at the switching field depends on the precise value of delta K, which means you cannot use the size of the jumps at the switching field to estimate the typical energy scale for the anisotropy tensor. So the best way to do it is to go from the switching field. Now you might ask, is it reasonable to have such variations in the anisotropy energy? I think in general this is a difficult question to answer. Remember, the spin can be up to 1,000, and what I'm telling you is by adding one electron to a grain with a spin 1,000, I can change the anisotropy energy by the order of 1% instead of 0.1%. So it's a non-trivial effect, And I'm not able to give you microscopic estimates of what these fluctuations should be, but I think Alan might be able to say more about that, because I know Carlo Canali and he are working on microscopic calculations. However, I should mention measurements on gadolinium clusters indicate that anisotropy energies can vary significantly if you add single electrons to such clusters. Okay, now the next question is, what are the discrete excitations? What is the nature of the discrete excitation that are being measured? And what is the how can we explain the energy spacing? Now, the most simple assumption would be, well, you have discrete states, and the energy between excitations is just by making particle-level excitations, taking electron from one level and putting it one level higher. However, the energy scale for that is the mean level spacing, which I claim was too big. The bulk mean levels, or the mean level spacing estimated from the bulk density of states, which I claim is too big. So another natural thing to look into are spin wave excitations, by which I mean excitations in which the direction of the magnetization vector changes by small amounts. And the way you would construct such excitations in this model is as follows. You'd start with a certain highest weight state where you have S more spin up than spin down electrons. You fill the spin down electrons up to a certain level, and then you fill the spin up electrons up to a certain higher level, and that's your highest weight state. And then you can act on this state with spin lowering operators to create a multiplet of states which all have the same total spin. And here I just schematically drew them for the case of S equal to 1. And these states would have different energies because the anisotropy energy will favor, well, let's say the highest weight state and penalize states more and more the direction the SZ quantum number changes from the maximal value. So you might expect discrete excitations from this. However, our conclusion was, after thinking about this for quite a while, this is probably not what they are seeing for several reasons. One, the resonance spacing you would expect between these different states with different m values is on the order of kn, the anisotropy energy, which is 0.01 millielectron volt. In other words, an order of magnitude smaller than the observed spacing. There are also other reasons. If you study the magnetic field behavior of these different of tunneling into states with different m quantum numbers, their slopes in a large magnetic field should depend on the change in the SZ quantum number, S initial minus S final, M initial minus M final, which if you start from the same initial state, should increase the bigger the magnetic, the slope should change systematically as you turn into this state or that state or that state or that state, and no such systematic behavior is seen. And also, if you do a more detailed analysis, we conclude that only two such resonances should have significant weight, and they see many of them. But I think the strongest argument is simply the energy scale is not working out. So the energy spacing between these different spin wave final states is simply too small to explain what has been observed. Okay, so where are we at the moment with our analysis of the model? I have proposed some crude way of understanding why these levels behave so strangely at small magnetic fields. However, I have not yet understood why all the levels move in the same direction with the large magnetic field and why the level spacing is what it is. So, the next idea was to consider non-equilibrium excitations on the grain. Non-equilibrium excitations can occur if the tunneling rate onto the grain is larger than the relaxation rate. So let me explain what I mean by that. Suppose I start with an initial state in which these levels are fully occupied. Then I tunnel one electron into this level and tunnel an electron out of this level. Now, meaning out of a different level than the one I tunneled into. That is possible if the threshold energy, the threshold voltage at which tunneling starts to happen is large enough that some of these lower-lying states are available once this electron tunnels in here. Well, if this happens, I'm left with a new initial state into which the next electron can tunnel, and therefore the next electron will see a different energy landscape, basically. So I see new transitions occurring once the rate for this electron to relax down here is smaller than the rate for new electron to tunnel. Okay, so if non-equilibrium happens, we expect new transitions, more lines to show up. And this can be probed experimentally if you have a gated sample, as I do in the latest set of experiments. Because by changing the gate voltage, you can change the threshold energy at which tunneling begins to happen, and so you can tune the amount of non-equilibrium. And so this is shown over here. Here we have a plot of conductance as a function of bias voltage and gate voltage. Round around here is the degeneracy point where n and n plus 1 electrons on the grain are more or less degenerate. And by changing the gate voltage, I can favor an n plus 1 electron ground state or an n electron ground state. And then the difference from 0 to here is basically the threshold energy. And you note that as I increase the gate voltage, that means increase the threshold voltage, at some point more transitions begin to show up. So over here, there are less tunneling lines than over here, which is a clear indication that non-equilibrium physics is happening on this grain. Okay? Which means we have to now try to analyze non-equilibrium excitations in the model that we've been studying. Okay, so if you have non-equilibrium, you can imagine a set of transitions of the following type. Suppose we start with a spin S0, SZ also equal to S0, ground state with n electrons. And we add a spin down electron to the grain, ending in a S-1 ground state. So this was the tunneling on event. Now, if I tunnel, now, if the tunneling off event now involves a spin up electron, the total spin of the final state will be one less than the initial state. Okay? And if, moreover, the lifetime of the state is longer than the time it takes for the next electron to tunnel, I can reach from here into a state with even smaller spin and so forth, and climb up an energy ladder, climb up a ladder of more and more highly excited states with the spin which increasingly differs from the initial spin. In other words, I have some kind of spin accumulation on the grain. And the question is now, what is the typical energy space in between successive resonances? So in a tunneling spectrum, you would see a peak due to this transition, and then this transition, and then this transition. And the question is, what is the energy increment which I need to achieve this transition once I have made that transition? Okay, now the results, if you estimate what the energies are as follows. How am I doing on time? 5 minutes up to the warning, or okay. So let me not go through the detail. The message is, if you go through the detail, it turns out the energy increment you need is to add, if the initial event is adding a spin down electron, is a minority level spacing minus the exchange energy divided by 2. And this is important because both of these energy scales are quite big. The minority is 1.2 over S0 EV, and U is the order of U over 2 is 1 EV over S0. But the difference of them is a small energy. And if you take a spin of about 1,000, we get an energy scale 0.2 milli electron volt, which is more or less the spacing that they see. So we were. Excuse me? Well, yes, there is physics to it. I think it's clear why you need to pay the energy, the level spacing, to add minority electrons to the grain. However, so what you do, you change the total spin, make it smaller, which costs the exchange energy. But the since the exchange energy is quadratic in spin, the penalty of changing the exchange energy from S to S minus 1 or from S minus 1 to S minus 2 gets less and less the smaller I make the spin. So it turns out this exactly gives you this factor. The penalty of making the spin smaller decreases the smaller the spin becomes because it's a quadratic function. Okay, so it follows from that. And we were very happy when we found the small energy scale because it was it's more or less in the right ballpark, and it wasn't clear otherwise how to get energy of that order. Now, if you believe this scenario, what it would mean is successive transitions all move in the same direction with applied magnetic field, because each time the tunneling transition involves adding minority electrons. So that would explain why all the lines are moving in the same direction in an applied magnetic field. Now, let me show you some data which supports that picture. And this is basically what is done here is to study two types of transitions, one where you where the initial set has n node plus 1 electrons, and the final set has n electrons, and then do a sweep at these energies as a function of magnetic field, and then do the same thing if you change the gate voltage in such a way that the initial set has n electrons and the final set n plus 1 electrons. Now, the slope of the magnetic field at large, the slope of the resonances at large magnetic field has useful information. Namely, it's proportional to minus the difference between the final and the initial spin. So over here, if the slope goes downward, it means the final spin is larger than the initial spin. And the final spin has n naught electrons, initial spin has n naught plus 1 electrons. So S naught is bigger than S naught plus 1, which means I'm adding minority electrons. Okay, and the same conclusion can be reached if you analyze the set of data where everything is just reversed. Now, the fact that, so what it basically means is minority electron tunneling is dominating the spectrum, and that is something which Canali and McDonald had predicted in their paper. And the simple reason is simply the minority density of states is much higher than the majority electron density of states at the Fermi surface. But it matches what we would expect, or it's sort of a, this condition is a prerequisite for the non-equilibrium ladder that I've been proposing over here, because if majority electrons had been dominating the tunneling, then over here I would not have minority level spacing, but the majority level spacing, and then would have cost me an order of four milli electron volts. Now, I should mention that the total number of peaks you would expect in this type of scenario depends on the initial threshold energy for tunneling. You can estimate the maximum number of peaks is proportional to this initial energy, which means if I change the amount of non-equilibrium by changing the gate voltage, I should be able to reduce the maximum number of states. And in the data, in particular, it means that at some large, basically it means some resonances should begin to disappear at large bias voltages, and the amount of resonances you see should depend on the gate voltage. And that's not what's happening. So something is still missing, and well, the answer is quite simply, I just showed you a small subset of all the possible excited states that you could possibly reach in a non-equilibrium scenario. So let me just briefly indicate what other types of transitions you can include. In the previous slides, I just included ground state to ground state spin transitions. But for each spin, you can include a whole set of more highly excited spin wave excitations. So this would be the S naught multiplet, this the S naught minus 1 multiplet, S naught minus 1 half, S naught minus 1 multiplet. And now to calculate the current for such a system, you'd have to solve a master equation including all possible transitions between these states. And that's what Silva has done, just to see how these spin wave excitations affect the transport. And the results are summarized down here. So, well, the main message is the excitation energy between these spin wave states is so small that you can only resolve it at very low temperatures. Okay, so in the first panel, the first two panels, I have a temperature of about 80 millikelvin, and these calculations were done for a very small spin of S equal to 10, because you have so many states to keep track of that it gets very difficult for larger spins. But I think qualitatively it indicates what's going on. And then you find a discrete set of states, which if you lower the temperature sufficiently, splits up into very many, very fine resonances. But at the temperatures at which experiment was done, namely bigger than the spin wave spacing, I think those would not show up. However, okay. sorry. Let me just state, if you include particle hole resonances, then you get, if you include particle hole resonances, you get the whole slew of new excitations. And the message is, if you think really hard about the model, there are enough low energy resonances to understand more or less what's going on. So, to summarize, we've analyzed experiments on tunneling via discrete quantum mechanical states in a nanomagnet. Hysteretic switching is observed via discrete states, and we can more or less understand the phenomenological features by using a description which goes beyond independent electrons, which includes anisotropy energy variations on the order of a few percent, and which includes non-equilibrium. Thank you very much. Absolutely. I mean, that will be a very important contribution. Well, I'm sure. Well, not in these particular experiments, the size was not varied systematically. But I think it's one known fact from magnetic studies of small grains that the shape and the surface anisotropy are very important, and they're competing. They point in different directions. So in general, there is a complicated interplay. And if the shape of the dot is not well characterized, it's hard to make systematic studies. But so I just treat it as a random number of which I can estimate the magnitude more or less.
So I mean, the model you have only gives you some general features that you observe, but you cannot really explain.
No.
I mean, line.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And I think. Can you go beyond just, you know, getting some?
Well, I think to explain line by line would be just hopeless because each. Well, that's a very interesting question. So I introduced this random anisotropy tensor. The question would be, can one do a random matrix theory model, for example, for that? I've not thought about that, and I'm not a random matrix expert, but. I think people in the audience that would know how to do that. It's an interesting question.
Yeah. Sure, this is related to that. If you want to calculate the parameters in your Hamiltonian from some microscopic Hamiltonian, like
yes.
Heisenberg model with an isotropy, say, then you to get your parameters, you would have to average those over the wave functions of the states. Because you're talking about interactions between states. And those models talk about interactions between sites. So you know, what you need in order to go from one to the other is the weights, the wave functions. And those have fluctuations which are actually known.
Yeah.
And also they are different from the surface in the
yeah, exactly.
And so on.
Exactly. So each wave function looks slightly different, so it would feel the effect of the spin orbit interaction differently, and that's what should give rise to this fluctuations in the anisotropy energy.
So actually this is the problem, I guess, with this model, because these grains, as far as I think, are nanocrystals. They are crystals, not absolute random systems. And the anisotropy that you came about is crystalline anisotropy.
No, not only. It's also shape and surface.
Okay, not only. So I guess you're saying basically 3%, or roughly 3% comes from just from the surface?
I don't know. This is just a phenomenological statement. If you analyze the data, you can see anisotropies of this shape, of this magnitude, by assuming that the effective anisotropy changes by 3%. And so this is now a challenge to people that do more microscopic analysis. Can you come up with this number by studying anisotropies?
But just can you tell us how big is the grain? What is the ratio of the number of atoms sitting on the surface to the total number of atoms?
Well, the grain, the atom number varies between 20 and 1,000. So, what would be the ratio of the surface to the volume?
Over 10%.
The surface?
Yeah.
1,000 atoms.
Yeah. So I don't find it unimaginable that this could happen. But it's, well, it's a very crude description, obviously. And so the message is just there is this number, 1 to 3% is sufficient to explain this funny behavior. Can one come up with microscopic input into this to explain this number?
There's a question over there.
This is what I would say. You can definitely not rule them out. And if you have low temperature, I think they should be seen. I might also mention this model you could also envision as a model for a magnetic quantum dot. I mean, magnetic semiconductor materials are being used. And if one ever manages to make them small enough to have a small number of electrons, I think a similar type of description would be applicable there. And maybe in those, you would be able to resolve those excitations.
Hasn't that something like that been done?
As far as I know, quantum dots with magnetic semiconductors have not been studied in great detail yet because these magnetic semiconductors are very new materials. But I'm hoping this is something that will happen in the future.
Was that a problem? Wouldn't the energy of the magnet with the wavelength of the
cycles? I think it is quite a bit bigger than the energy scales here. Yes, yes. I estimated, I don't remember the number, but it's definitely bigger than these energies.
Yeah, I estimated it's a few millivolts. You can't, I mean, the people you can here with a quick view from the K to 0 1, they have a wavelength counter with the size of the guy.
Any further questions? If not, let's thank you again.
Thank you.